Winspiration, the way to the essential. On UK Health Radio, Winspiration brings wisdom and information for an extraordinary future. Together, we can shape the world we want to live in. So let's get real and create the ideal. Be extraordinary. Welcome to the Winspiration episode today about what could be the future model of the society be. And I feel really blessed having here for this first show to this topic, Blaine Bartlett from California here on the show. And he wrote a book about capitalism, and we will talk about capitalism today. A lot of people say, wow, that's an evil thing. And maybe capitalism is something like a knife. You can do good with it or bad with it. We will find out. So be aware, listen. Very interesting. And welcome, Blaine. Thank you for being part of this and sharing your wisdom and experience with it. You're today... was a consultant in international leadership, consciousness for leaders and companies or entrepreneurs, and teaching even how capitalism should be in the future. You wrote a book, Compassionate Capitalism, and it's even a heart for the world on it, and the dollar, this combination. And when I listen to politics and everything, that seems not possible, what they say. So really curious to pick your brain today. And I know you were not always the super capitalist advocate. So if you please share a little bit where you come from and why you do today what you do today.
Well, Wolfgang, thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it. And that's an interesting question. Where did I come from? I'll just start by saying I grew up on a farm in the state of Oregon here in the United States. And I mention that because part of my life's journey is informed by my relationship with nature. I would go for walks. I would go for, I'd work in the fields. And when you stop and really look at how nature is organized, it is truly the only free market system that you will find. Mm-hmm. There are no constraints in nature. And what's interesting about the way nature works, and I'll answer this question in terms of the, what was I before I became an advocate for compassionate capitalism? Nature works on the premise that everything, first of all, it works on a premise of abundance. Mm-hmm. Everything, it's an abundant universe. Everything is energy. It's always moving. And everything in nature ultimately becomes a center of distribution, not a center of accumulation.
Yeah.
And that is a very fundamental distinction that needs to be recognized, because capitalism, as most people experience it, is organized around being a center of accumulation.
Yeah.
And that's toxic. It's very toxic. So before I actually became kind of an advocate of what I call compassionate capitalism, my educational background was in marketing. My educational background was international business. I went to school in Europe as well as here in the US. And I started noticing, just kind of how businesses worked. And I was part of the machine. Went to work and did marketing work and that kind of stuff. But I began to notice that it wasn't particularly a healthy place to live. My experience is that most workplaces, most work environments tended to be toxic to the human spirit. People would come in and come to work, and they would. This is a broad generality, but they would wait around being told what to do, and then they would be resentful because somebody was telling them what to do. Then they go home and they would wait for somebody. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you go home and you're autonomous. You're doing what you want to do. You have agency. You're moving around freely, but you come to work, and all of a sudden, the constraint of the system said you are supposed to be here. You are supposed to do that. Don't tell me what you think. Just do what I tell you. Yes. And now that's, again, broad generalities. But it was toxic to that human spirit, which is where creativity exists, where innovation exists. And it's not an accident that entrepreneurs tend to be very creative, and entrepreneurs don't like being part of a big system.
Yeah.
They want to go out and they want to do things. Yeah, so
that's it, like, you need to do this and this. It's like we say, if you're, is it in English the right term? If you're normed, or someone says, this is a norm, that is not natural. Even if everybody is doing it, it doesn't need to be natural. And
right,
you want to be creative and see the world, you need to use your brain and not only a few synapses. Yeah. That's the whole thing possible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, where I ended up actually landing essentially was just through questioning, what's the purpose of business? You know, why do people do what they do? Why do they organize businesses, create businesses? And if you go back to Milton Friedman in the 1950s, Nobel laureate in economics, yeah, he famously said that the purpose of business was to make a profit. Well, that seemed to be pretty short-sighted to me. And so I started really examining, you know, what do successful businesses actually produce? Well, what they produce is not a product. What they produce is not a service. What they produce is a possibility in people's minds that I can be better if I consume this product or service. So what they're selling, highly successful organizations sell the possibility of thriving. Mm-hmm. The purpose of business is to make possible an enhanced way of thriving on the planet, not just surviving. And if I feel like I can thrive, I'm going to probably want to buy your product or service. So you will make money.
Yeah.
But the purpose,
possibility of thriving. We have the two topics. What is the business? And the other thing is, because we say it's thriving, what is the human all about? What makes us different to animals? So it's not just about survival. It is about thriving, getting a totally different conscious level. So in my book, The Best Is Yet to Come, I said, companies are there to solve problems for the people. And in the moment, we live totally opposite. And you go even a different way. It's not only about solving problems. No, it's even the next step, that they are capable to thrive, to really develop and go to a better, extraordinary future.
Yeah. And this is where health and well-being become really important.
Yeah.
And I know that that's part of the focus of this this platform is health. Yeah. And I don't mean just physical health, emotional health, spiritual health. When businesses take responsibility for the whole, and what by that, I mean literally, my business activity touches everything. I mean, there are microplastics in the bottom of the Mariana Trench, the deepest place in the world. There are nanoparticles in rain falling, all over the planet. You cannot escape the consequences of businesses' activities. And businesses, for the most part, and this is where I think we've got very, very bad counsel when we started looking at profit as being the metric for success. Mm-hmm. Profitability is a short-term focus. When I'm looking at enhancing the possibility to thrive on the planet and taking responsibility for ensuring that, I start looking at consequential, what's the consequences of my action? Short-term, mid-term, and long-term.
Yeah.
And my designing my product, my designing my service so that there is no unintended consequence that is compromising the health and well-being of not just my customers, not just my family, but the environment, the globe, those sorts of things, which forces us to make hard decisions about how we go to market, how we actually produce things. And those hard decisions need to be made. Capitalism as it runs, is actually executed today by most, and I mean literally by most companies, is with a short-term, immediate return on investment.
Once every 3 months, new numbers.
And it's focused on accumulation. Mm-hmm. Can I get what I want now? And we'll cut costs. We'll go to market in an inefficient manner because it costs less to do that. But the long-term cost, we look around and we've got acid rain, we've got acidification of the ocean, Most cancers are environmentally caused. You can trace all of the health and well-being of the human species, not alone the extinction of species on the planet. I mean, there's 50% less birds on the planet today than there were 40 years ago. Direct cause of that is environmental pollution, and the consequence of that is the way businesses are conducted.
Yeah,
the most polluting, the second most polluting.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about that. You just put the point of making profit, and when you said in the short term. And I think here is another point that if I look at the banking system or these credit loan system, teaching the people the same thing, get out of this natural short term. So they are addicted now, like drug addicts. If you take them the loan away, the credit away, they don't know each other. So it's not just companies. It's really this, like we said, the cancer
system
is spreading. Yes.
It's spreading. The entire economy of the world is based on consumption.
Yeah.
And when consumption stops or starts to go down, everybody goes crazy. It's kind of, oh my God, the sky is falling. We have to, keep growing, growing at any cost. Growth at any cost is called cancer.
Yes.
when you look at that in the human body, when cells start dividing and growing uncontrollably, it's a cancer.
Yeah, but it's fascinating in the first moment. Wow, how fast can the cancer grow? Look at these cells, how fast they grow. But in the end, they always kill the host. So it's just what we don't get. But interesting question is consumption. Is it really consumption, or is this a consumption of the wrong things? Like in the past, I just simply say, we created wealth because of war and sickness. Or like we said, it doesn't matter what they consume. They consume things that doesn't help them. It makes them think. What if just we need to believe in it, because I think don't see the possibilities that we can say, oh, we have it already, that we can see the numbers for that. What if we focus on peace and health? So turn it everything under the, would we then could accept growth?
Mm-hmm. You reframe what consumption is about in the way that you're talking about it. Are we consuming health and well-being? Are we consuming peace as opposed to consuming fear? Yeah. When we look at the political environment today, fear is one of the most base of human emotions, and it's also the easiest emotion for manipulators to access. Political parties do this all of the time. The rise of nationalism. The immigrants, they are coming in to threaten us. That's a fear-based conversation that creates an opportunity for consuming the political ideology of whoever it is. It's mongering the fear. And we have to become, I think, very aware as a populace about what's going on in our environments. And I don't mean physical environments as much as emotional, intellectual, and spiritual environments. What is going on? What are we being fed? What are we consuming? And anybody that postulates fear and says it's us against them, they are going to take what we have. Those sorts of things are unbelievably dangerous. To the human system. Nature doesn't doesn't organize around fear. Nature organizes. And that's not to say that bad things, quote unquote, bad things, that stuff doesn't happen. A tiger will eat a gazelle, or not a gazelle, a lion will eat a gazelle. On the African plain,
we do the same thing.
So there are appropriate places where fear is conducive to health and well-being, but not a pandemic of fear.
And the difference between fear and danger. Fear normally is confusion, because we feel the emotion, and then we believe we are the emotion. But it's a normal thing that the life ends with death. So if I shouldn't feel it, I should. Like a fear doesn't take the death away, it takes the life away. So what can we do there? But history is focusing, like you said also in another talk, we are not connected to whatever consciousness is, if we only see the 3D world, okay, you have more water, you have more cows or whatever, I need to steal to take away. Can you go with this also in this context? Because I got the one someone told me, I didn't really check it. Because we have CEOs for everything, the officers in the companies. Mm-hmm. Let's go 2,000 years back when the first bigger organization, business organization started. There were no business schools. Nobody knew how to do it. So the only people who knew how to run a bigger organization were the officers. So they got to the military and took the people there. Can you run the show? And that's why they called them, we are the officer for that. And so that's why we're totally still in this, I need to get more market shares, I need to fight and have this. And you're still in this competing old, let's say, officer thinking, war thinking.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, most organizations are put together. They're organized on a hierarchical structure, which mirrors a military model.
Yeah.
And you know, you'll hear this in boardrooms. I mean, I've lived my adult life in boardrooms in some way, shape, or form. It's a war out there. You've got to capture market share. There's a competitor that needs to be trounced.
Yes.
You know, all of those sort of things. And competition by itself isn't inherently bad. And I want to be very clear about that.
Yes.
Yeah, competition is a great way to hone my skills, to up-level way of engaging the world.
Yes.
What's the problem with competition in the way that it's actually constructed or actually executed in the world today is it's predicated on a paradigm or a consciousness of scarcity.
Yeah.
It's rooted in a notion that says it's a scarce world out there and it has scarce resources. I've got to get mine. Nature doesn't operate that way. There is no scarcity in nature in the big picture frame. Everything is abundant. It's all there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's cyclical. I mean, there may be seasons where there's a drought, but the rains will come. Yeah. Things will cycle through.
Yeah.
And it's this short-term thinking that lends itself to competing for scarcity. It's not scarce. If we operated out of a mindset of abundance,
yeah,
it's an abundant world. There's an abundant market. I start getting creative about and innovative about how I actually can manifest a larger market. How can I actually bring more into view? Because there is more to view if I'm actually becoming creative about it.
This is a switch from where we're coming and where we're going. And let's just please just make a short break. And then we just talk about what Brain recommends, how we organize the extraordinary future.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so Blaine, what should we do? What do you recommend? Do we need to change schools, business schools, whatever? Where's the best way? First of all, where are you going? Where's the best way to start?
Honestly, the best way to start is a change in consciousness. You know, I mean, all of the other things that you described, the schools, the mechanisms that, you know, the hows that we actually put together our worlds, are all just a manifestation of an existing consciousness. I mean, business schools, the whole educational system in the world today is organized around developing little pieces of people that will fit into an economic machine and will let that machine run. Yeah. And it's and the part's disposable. I mean, yeah, when you think about how language actually reflects, the thinking paradigm, the consciousness, people are our greatest asset. Well, assets are meant to be used.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, make no mistake about it. Assets are used. Most people feel used in their environments. Our people are our greatest resource. Again, resources get consumed. Assets get depreciated for the purpose of taxes. I mean, all of those sorts of things come into play, and it's a consciousness thing. Mm-hmm. So if we don't change the consciousness, and this is why I wrote the book Compassionate Capitalism, which, and you mentioned this, it's almost an oxymoron. How does compassion and capitalism work? Because most people don't experience it.
Yeah.
The idea of compassion recognizes, well, first of all, I can't be compassionate towards or about something unless I feel connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have to feel connection in order to experience compassion and to behave compassionately. There's that personal connection. So when we start thinking in terms of consciousness, awareness is one thing. Yeah, just recognizing consciously, that there's other stakeholders out there. Compassion is the behavioral analog, the behavioral way that conscious awareness that I can change begins to show up. So becoming a compassionate leader in a compassionate organization starts to bring into play a different consciousness about how business can be conducted. And make no mistake about it, those of you that are listening, business is probably the single greatest creator of the problems that we have today, but it's also very likely to be the greatest single source of getting ourselves back on track. And again, it's because business touches everything. How business is conducted makes a big difference. And that's a consciousness thing.
One part is a consciousness thing, for sure. If everybody were there, government and companies and the employees or people, or the customers, they'd have buying power, they could control. But then I also have to say the book Super Capitalism explains the globalization and how it, makes everything bad because money creates corruption and the whole system is corrupt and will not out of itself really heal. So do you believe there is a chance with consciousness that all companies, governments will change? Or is the hope that new consciousness builds new companies, new systems?
That's a great question. Buckminster Fuller, the great futurist, I'll paraphrase something he said. He said, in order to change an existing paradigm, you need to have a paradigm that is larger that can actually absorb the existing paradigm. So the existing, we've got a lot of things in place that are working. Yeah. I mean, we've got supply chains. We've got, we've got a number of infrastructure components that are in place. The question is, in service of what? In service of, and that's where this new paradigm can make things different. The paradigm of compassionate capitalism. How do we use our existing infrastructure for good so that we become more effective at being centers of distribution rather than centers of accumulation? And that, I think, is how we can begin to turn things around. Now, that's an abstraction. That's an abstract way of thinking about it. But there are businesses that are doing this today. There are businesses that are actually acting as centers of distribution with their IP. They give a lot of stuff away. It's not that they're being altruistic and just saying, here, take it, it's all yours. No, they recognize that there's a quid pro quo. There will be something coming back, but it's a long-term investment in a future that is organized around thriving, not surviving.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference.
Yeah, but then I always mention I was really influenced by Mohamed Yunus.
yes.
And learn from him the idea of not or a no profit is bad. Not for profit is the right thing to do. Purpose poor before profit. But we want profit. We want to be profitable that we can more invest in doing good. So to give more. and not just to, but that is the whole thing, what kind of politicians we normally have. There's what we, how to get my position, my power, and they're fighting there and not really for the people. The parties are fighting. So we have in parliaments, I see it here in Europe, and I guess America's the same. They are fighting who has the power. So it's like the war game still there and not
exactly
not like the ideal thought of the Olympic Games is no professionals, amateurs, and just compete about techniques, who's best, and the development. That is the dream.
There's an idealism there that I think is worth pursuing. I truly do. You know, part of the human condition is that we will tend to sort, you know, when we're looking at things, when we're considering things, we tend to sort for differences. So I see somebody walking across the street, or I see somebody coming into the office, and I start noticing, how are they different from me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's for differences lends itself to an us them dynamic, and which is feeds into this, I need to have power, I need to have control because they are different. When we start, and that's a consciousness thing, when we start becoming aware that we're doing that and the consequences of doing that, we can begin to do something different, which is to sort for similarities. How are we actually alike?
Yes.
How are we similar? And how can we leverage that similarity so that we can grow more effectively, so that collectively we can thrive? And it's not socialism, it's not communism, it's not any of isms. It's just a recognition that we are all connected. We are all connected.
So call also fear-based again, because if we both, on this Zoom or meet, we can say, oh, what is the difference? He is now an American and I'm a German, so what is the difference? So I see the difference. Would we meet whatever deep in China, we two, with a long nose, someone like me. Here comes the awareness or the consciousness that we can really see where the differences must be also something the same, right? Because in the end, we're all the same, as we know.
We're all the same.
How do we get people really... we always can say consciously, what is your idea that the person who is listening now here, how can we tell them, you do this, and consciousness, what do you say, rises, grows, or whatever. Well, let's make a break, and you can have a short minute to formulate the answer.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, yes.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz. Part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah. So before we took that break, you had asked me, what are some things or a thing that somebody could do to begin to access that or to leverage consciousness? How, I think, first of all, we need to define what we're talking about with consciousness. And before we started the show, you and I had a little conversation about the difference between awareness and consciousness. Consciousness permeates everything. And it literally, if we look at it in a quantum physics perspective, It's the field. It's the electromagnetic field in which everything is present. Everything is in this electromagnetic field, and it's all frequency. It's all vibrational frequencies. And every possibility exists in this field. Awareness is noticing where I'm at in the field. Awareness is noticing what's blocking or enabling me to access that field. That's what awareness is. Awareness creates the possibility of more choices. And so when I become more aware, I start noticing where I am in the field, and I start recognizing that there are choices that I can make that will move me up or down, up or down, it's relative, but it can move me to a different position in the field. And when I move to a different place in the field, I manifest different realities because there are things that exist on that frequency level that don't exist on another frequency level. And it's very similar to tuning a dial on a radio. You know, I mean, all frequencies are there. Music is playing on the 98.1 on the FM band that is not playing on 89.4 on the FM band. It's different music, but it's always there.
Yeah.
So awareness is noticing where I'm at on the dial so that I can say, is this working or not working? And is this consistent with what I say I want to have in my life as an experience? I have control over that. I don't have control of the music that's playing out there because it's just there, but I have control about where I dial into, that sort of thing. So
is this what we're looking at? Do you need for the control, not only the capacity, I can whatever change the frequency, but where do I get the idea that there is other music out there?
That's where I start to be, this is where meditation practices are useful. We are so inundated with noise in our living of life. And we've got radio, we've got TV, we've got news, we've got politicians, we've got marketers, we've got all of this noise is coming in. And because of the noise, we can't really hear that inner voice. So one of the things that I work with my clients on is giving them a practice of stillness. Now, you can call it meditation, you can call it centering, you can call it whatever you want, but it's crucial, particularly for leaders. And by definition, everybody's a leader. I'll just kind of make that point real quickly here because everybody is a leader in their life. We have to be able to quiet our minds long enough to hear that voice that wants to express itself through me. I'm a vehicle.
Yeah.
I'm a vehicle. Is used, spirit moves to and through me. The field moves to and through me, and it gets to use me to create.
Mm-hmm.
And most people find themselves kind of capped because they don't listen to that voice. The voice is always there. That messaging system is always in activation.
I wonder
so if becoming quiet allows me to move this, up and down the aisle.
Do we have this? Come we on the planet Earth with this? And just the adults say, stop meditating, stop dreaming, stop being connected, stop seeing things we don't see. Because I'm still struggling a little bit. We both were in situations within the companies, with my own companies as lawyer and everything, and then realized that something makes no sense. But when you shared what companies today do, what kind of consequences, that's a plastic where this ends, little nanoplastic pieces. You were not thinking as a marketing guy that I was not thinking when I, as a lawyer, was, I need to win this lawsuit or whatever. What consequences on the side of what I do there for the world. But then we start somehow to see me and start thinking, but we have not the school. Everything is short. It's not only short money, it's also, I only need to look here. We know where we would play chess, only think about the next move you do is not enough. You need to think a few more.
Yeah.
So, and this thinking more, could we just simply train it that wherever in school, everybody learns it, or what kind of consciousness or meditation technique says, if I do this, then it opens up and then you suddenly see more. You don't need to think it through.
Mm-hmm. A specific meditation technique that I use, and I've been meditating since the late 1960s, is when I first started meditating. But one of the techniques that I use is just quieting myself to the point where I get to the experience of being nowhere in no time and being nobody.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nobody, no place. There's no time. Mm-hmm. There's no sense. I'm just aware.
Yeah.
But I don't have a body to be aware of. I don't have a timeline to be aware of. I don't have a space that I feel myself in. That place of complete neutrality.
Yes.
And it takes practice to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a non-duality.
The non-duality state. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At that point, I'm part of something much bigger, mm-hmm. but the awareness, I don't have the awareness of Blaine. I just am there.
Yeah.
There's something about going to that place that opens up access to that radio dial.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I kind of come back and I can go to that place with an idea, with a thought, with something that I'm wanting to consider, but I go there without attachment. When I come back, almost every time I've got an answer that I can begin to do something with that is different than anything that I thought of while I was kind of sitting at my desk going, God, I don't know how to do this. I know. And it doesn't have to be a long time. It can be 5 minutes. Sometimes I'll just do it when I'm taking my morning shower. I'll just kind of let the water rain down on me and just kind of go nowhere. Yeah. Go no place.
You're not the aware. You don't have the awareness about Blaine.
Just
2 days ago, you were in Kenya, in Africa, I know you're also on the board of Unstoppable Foundation. You support a lot of building schools and villages over there in Kenya with the Maasai land, and the Maasai, if I understood right, they don't have these I worth. It's just the we culture. And coming
back, we culture.
The Blaine consciousness. I was surprised there also that they give you the name when you're, let's say, 15, because how can you give someone a name if you don't know who they are? Yeah. So we get a name, Wolfgang or whatever, and now you need to fit in. They form us and don't watch it. So also from consciousness. So what is, and I felt in this lesson also, they're not allowed to kill lions anymore when the boys are 13, go out. So they are not warriors in the old sense anymore. Is it right? They call them warriors of wisdom or whatever, something, education.
Warriors of wisdom.
Warriors of wisdom. Wow. Where does all this consciousness come from?
I think it's just a willingness to, and you and I both have spent time with these tribes people. And there's a willingness to actually recognize, and I'll put it in my language here, but is what we're doing working or not working, as opposed to is this right or wrong? Is this good or bad? Mm-hmm. And very interestingly, just because of the connection that the Maasai, particularly the Maasai, have with nature, they naturally would move towards is this working or not working as a guiding ethos, guiding my actions. So, killing lions as part of the rite of passage for the male warriors.
Yeah.
In today's world, no longer working for a whole lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
And because they recognize that, thriving is the intent of nature as a warrior. Part of my role as a warrior is to ensure the thriving of my community. That's the charter for a warrior to embrace. The rituals that are involved with stepping into that role, but the rituals are just rituals. They're intended to inform an idea. And it's interesting when we think of relationship, we have relationship with ideas.
Yeah.
And people get attached to the form of the idea. And that attachment to form goes into then determining, is this right? Is this wrong? Is this good? Is this bad? Is courses of action and things that we do, as opposed to, is this still working or is it not working any longer? And being willing to allow the form of the relationship to change, I think, is really crucial. As long as we adhere, I'll take it back to capitalism. If as long as we adhere to the way that capitalism is developed, it's about accumulation, it's about market share capture, it's about the form of our relationship with capitalism needs to change.
Yeah.
The form needs to change. The intent of capitalism, if we go back to Adam Smith, was always about thriving. You know, the whole notion of, you know, Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations was reciprocity. Yeah, in trading partners, you win, I win. There's a win-win-win-win dynamic.
Yeah, but that is difficult for most people to understand. I experience a lot of people think, oh, we make a win-win and then they share the profit. That is not really win-win. Yeah, it's really more on the conscious level and what we're really striving for, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So we get back to that. The form, we look at, does the form need to change?
Yeah.
And my vote is yes, it does. The intent is where we go back to. What was the intent? The intent is thriving.
Yeah. And there we need to give more wisdom and information to bring in form.
Information,
the right,
yeah.
The right thing. We just had the warriors of wisdom and Maasai, you know, we come back to capitalism. So what is the right way to say then? Blaine is a warrior for compassionate capitalism, or what is better to say? He is the angel of compassionate capitalism, not having the warrior and the officers again.
Well, I mean, if we take warrior in the truest sense of the word, a champion, because that's essentially what a warrior is. It's a champion for an ideal. And I would look at myself as being that. I'm a champion for the ideal of compassionate capitalism.
Yeah. So then the question today also, now we're talking more of the compassionate part, but is capitalism really the best form, or can we develop something better?
Who was it that said democracy is one of the messiest form of governments that we could ever envision, but it's also probably the best that we could ever come up with?
Yeah.
I think capitalism is kind of the same way. If we take the isms out of it, whether it's communism, socialism, capitalism, you know, just take the isms out of them and don't, because you know, when we start labeling things, we start creating boxes. So the question I would have, you know, our listeners, you know, consider is when you are, you know, in business, when you're a consumer of business, don't worry about whether it's capitalistic or not. Is it enhancing your likelihood of thriving?
Yeah.
Is the way that the business is conducting its business likely to enhance thriving for the planet?
Yeah.
And then you make choices. And you know, capitalism for me is predicated on free choice. I mean, you look again back to nature. Nature is the only truly free market system. There are no artificial constraints in nature. Everything just kind of, you know, it dies, it gets reborn. It gives things away. It takes things. But it's uninhibited. It's unencumbered.
Yeah.
That's the model that I would envision for capitalism. Now, to me, that works.
Do you agree then, ask Rupert Sheldrake, let's say the professor about morphogenetic field, yep, and so on, artificial intelligence, is this bad or is it good? And I just got a very short answer. Depends on the intention.
Exactly.
So can we say capitalism is just a way of this? Some people
depends
say
on the intention.
It's just be correct, accountable. So if you give money, you pay it back. It's just about accountability. And giving loans to people that they consume something, get addicted and lose the sense of reality, and misused, that is for sure alone and all the credits is bad. But if I come up with an idea, maybe for the first time, whatever, we can get the salt water to drink water, and we need a machine for it, but I don't have the money or like the microcredits Yunus used. If the credits are really used, like you said, to help people to thrive and create good results, then wow, what a great invention.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't need a huge return on that investment. It doesn't have to be usurious.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be modest. I mean, again, I go back to nature. There is nothing in nature that looks for a 20% return on its investment. There's a recognition that there will when I drop fruit from my tree, it will get consumed, but part of it gets deposited back in the earth, and it's, you know, so that's the interest. and it gets back into the nutrients structure so that the tree can grow again. So there's this cycle that just kind of plays itself out.
Then I come, and we come now also to the end of this episode here. Something was always triggering me. And then the book, The Best Is Yet to Come, I quoted Robert Kennedy about the gross domestic product. It's measuring every shit, everything what is bad, but not what makes life worth living. And in Europe, I don't know. I know you have in your book, Compassionate Capitalism, crazy examples with the investors and the prison. So now they get guaranteed that they have a good interest rate for prison. So we need some people in the prison.
It's got to keep the prisons full in order to pay for it. There's an investment here.
We in Europe with the gross domestic product decided now that also criminal stuff or whatever they do, it's criminal work, counts now for the gross domestic product.
GDP.
Yes, GDP, yes. And the European Union made a law that it is. And then the official rate of being in debt, because it's measured to the GDP, dropped. So if we would say mafia, well, let's say, could we ask Al Capone to come back and create more mess that the gross domestic product goes up and we are fine and I can borrow more money or country can go more in debt.
I consume more. And
yeah, so we know somehow this is shit. Like if also if we let's do this measuring the worth thing and says, wow, this is how you measure the country's wealth or development or thriving. What is your idea to create a new quality of GPD, as we said, this is what we should measure?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I'm on the board of the World Business Academy, and the World Business Academy was the catalyst. It actually came up with the idea for a movement that's called Just Capital. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Just Capitalism, and basically a measuring movement here. What are we measuring? Are we meant? Yeah. And the intent was to replace the traditional Fortune 500 list, the Forbes richest person in the world list, by adding different metrics. Yeah.
The kind like Human Development Index. Now also.
Bring us. Yeah. So corporations, and right now it is corporations, are being measured on a whole spectrum of social, environmental, well-being, political, social responsibility metrics, not just return on investment, not just profitability, not just market cap. Yeah, those become incidental to these other metrics. And Just Capital is getting quite a bit of traction right now. A lot of companies are starting to pay attention to where they rank in the Just Capital 100. Mm-hmm. So, it's an old aphorism, but what gets measured gets paid attention to.
Yeah.
So, we change the metrics.
Yes.
We change the metrics in service of something that is organized around thriving, health and well-being, societal, being a generative society, those sorts of things.
Yeah, we can see in Europe, there's just a education thing about kids in schools. And we have a kind of study comparing different countries. And Finland is normally always top. So why is Finland
right at the top?
Why? There's not so much different in mathematics. So why they are top? They have a totally different value system about teachers, about school. Yeah. And this is okay. We pick then, like you do with the Just Capital, pick some points and says we need to measure this or change the value of this. So we have from what you said, we need to be careful. Even everybody knows giving makes you happy. So that's the beautiful part. Yep. So we all know it. But if we do it on a good level, organize a country was organized like this, that the companies can do this and people live, that is wonderful. And then criterias for mission. So this was consciousness now, especially also for the companies. What do you share? And always the people in. I want to ask you now two things. First, maybe kind of a wonderful closing for this And the next one is give me the promise that we make another session and talking just about leadership.
You have that promise. I love talking about leadership. I think we can get pretty granular with that. That would be great. So just along that line, the question of how do we do this? You know, how do we move into compassionate capitalism? That is a question for leaders. And I don't mean titled leaders. I don't mean the CEOs. I mean you and me, you know, the listener. Leaders cause movement. That's what leaders do. They cause movement. Mm-hmm. A very simple definition. Everybody is always causing movement. So we need to be conscious about and aware of what kind of movement are we causing.
Yeah.
So I don't want to use the word advice here, but my prescription, my suggestion would be for each of us, to pay attention to the movement that we're generating in our life. We take actions, those actions cause things to happen.
Yes.
We have control over that. And we get to make choices, and people will respond to the choices that we make. So rather than just being an unconscious consumer, be a conscious consumer.
Yeah. Super great. Yeah. Lane, I love it. This inspirational hour is about sharing, bringing wisdom and information, and you delivered both, and we all feel how much wisdom is behind experience. It's not just I read something and share it. Super, thank you. Before we come to another session about leadership, where can people reach you? What is the best? We will have a link for sure here. You are the avatar.
Yeah. Yeah, the best place to reach me right now is going to be LinkedIn. Is a great platform. My website, blainebartlett.com. Mm-hmm. I've got all kinds of resources up there, and you can start poking around on that site and get just about any information about programs I do, books that I've written, that sort of thing. But LinkedIn and my website, blainebartlett.com, two of the best ones.
Super. Thank you very much, Blaine, for
my your pleasure, Wolfgang. Insights.
And we just somehow on the surface, but I think we get an idea of what we all can do to create the living, more paradisal. Like I said, I don't know if this is the right English word, but I believe a kind of paradise on earth is possible. At least I believe the best is to come, and we will make it happen all together. Thank you for listening, and hope you took some notes and start implementing something in your life. See you next time, or hear you next in the show on the UK Health Radio. Thank you, Blaine. This was another episode of Winspiration, Wisdom and Information to support you getting out of illusions, false identifications, limiting beliefs. We all have the power and potential to be more, do more, have more, give more. Reality is what is possible in the universe, and the best is yet to come. If you want to dive deeper into possibilities of creating the extraordinary future, go to winspiration.global or to wolfensonnenburg.com. More information and some free downloads like the email program Dream Goals Reality or a copy of the book The Best Is Yet To Come can be found on the UK Health Radio website under the Listen On Demand and Presenters section. Join us again next week on the Winspiration Show for more wisdom and information to create your extraordinary future.